guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
I mean, we kind of suppress some of our emotions. It's kind of our role and what we do. So, you know, even when things are going real well and, you know, by the book and according to plan, we generally don't ride those waves very much. We have to immediately look at what we need to do next, what we need to do now and what we need to do next. So that's what a little bit of what we've seen over the first 13 games, I think. We've seen a lot of that.
I feel like that's Judd's philosophy every time he takes the microphone to deliver his thoughts on the sporting events of the season. You're looking to suppress your emotions first, put some space around your thoughts, get very meditative, and then speak. Is that
constantly suppressing my emotions, and it's tough to do because I am – the thing about me is that most people don't get, I'm very, very deep, and like I get hurt easy. Criticism bothers me greatly. And so I always try and think through my red hot takes for how is this going to affect the outside community that might be mad at me because it's a day by day process, Phil. It's a day, always working through it. I actually have decided as of today's show that if I'm on a take that I feel is just too hot and the cousin stands might be really, really mad, I'm going to pull myself from the take. And I don't care, like, if you guys are like, that's a great take. Like,
but what if you're coasting along with your
right, no,
with
but
your
I'm
take.
Saying, like, you might be saying, oh, yeah, go, Judd, this is awesome. I will stop, and I will lift myself from said take, and I will call in a cousin Stan, perhaps, to finish the take.
And what happens is, sometimes when it's your third time delivering the take over the course of, a week, you don't want the audience to hear that take for a third time. So you want to bring someone else in to finish the take.
Yeah,
right? That's what the analytics say.
And the best part is the third time through the take, I could have started it. And let's say for the sake of the conversation that we're on right now, the thread, if you will, that like I am 5 points into my third take, but I mean there's still points to go. Like let's say there are 9 total. I'll stop right there. I'll stop.
Well, let's do this here, okay? Mackie and Judd, welcome to this Friday show. We've got Sports Movie Rewind on today's episode, including a great Kevin Costner sports movie. Not a baseball movie, Draft Day. One of the most insane draft days in NFL history that we're going to break down. But we're going to give Judd a little choose-your-own-adventure. We're going to go back in time here to yesterday's game against the Sox.
Red Sox.
The Sox.
The Red Sox.
Twins looking to avoid a 4-game sweep at home to the Red Hot Sox. And they won the game.
Yep.
So the Twins have, they snapped their 5-game losing streak. But I want to go back to, and Judd, we're going to put Judd in a baseball uniform here. So you're gonna dress up like Tom Kelly. Would you go Sox high or would you leave him down if you're a baseball
Oh, no, player? Sox high.
Okay.
Rocco yesterday. Went Sox high. Stirrups.
Ooh, I love me some stirrups.
Yeah, well, the stirrups, well, good
I mean,
look.
You know, it was Jackie Day, right? So they're all wearing 42. And Rocco went stirrups. I absolutely thought it was a great look.
I wear them just casually sometimes.
Just the stirrups,
just
too.
Just the stirrups, and
just around the apartment.
That's right.
Around the apartment.
Just a V-neck. And
everything else flying right. Free.
Yeah, just this.
So here's your choose-your-own-adventure, okay? You, yes. Judd Zulgad, manager of the Minnesota Twins, have seen your team meltdown several times already this season late in games, okay?
I'm Billy. From last week.
Billy Haywood.
Billy Haywood. I'm Billy Haywood now.
A much more grizzled and, I would say, forlorn-looking version of Billy Haywood.
Definitely Billy after being introduced to alcohol. There's no question about that. Yeah.
This is how it started. This is how it's going.
Yeah, this is how it's going. Billy Haywood.
And your starting pitcher, Michael Pineda, who, by the way, over his last 15 starts, has a 2.5 earned run average. He's been one of the better starting pitchers, low-key, in baseball over that 15-start stretch. And he is dealing. He's through 7 innings, and he is 2 batters over the minimum at that point with 88 pitches under his belt, and your team holds a 3-0 lead. Manager Judd Zulgad, choose your own adventure.
What do I do here? What do I do? Is that what you're saying? Do I lift him? Do I go to the bullpen? Because by my count, I believe he was five batters through the third time. So he had actually been allowed to turn the corner and get the first like five guys, which is actually means I believe he was due to face six through nine potentially, which one would think would be easier than one through five. But who am I to say? My own adventure.
I mean, Hunter Renfroe is lethal.
Let's see here. Can I
seven spot?
Can I? Do you want me? Well, you know what? I'm going to throw a question right back at you as I choose my adventure, and I want to know how you want me to think of this adventure that I'm about to embark on. Do you want me to choose my own adventure from what the research says and just go by that, or do you want me to go by the research and also the gut feel of the fact that my team's on a five game losing streak? If we lose, we're going to be 1-6 on this home stand. My pitcher is going great guns. I had, and I'll grant you this, it was a couple of seven inning games, but I had a double header the day before, and I play in Anaheim tomorrow. Do you want me to use common sense, or do you want me to just go by what I know?
Actually, I don't think the Twins structure allows for you to do anything but use a spreadsheet. So I'm sorry, sir. You have to make this decision.
The banana's out.
You have to make this decision.
Hansel
only based
Robles
on
time. It's Hansel Robles time.
The Undertaker coming in.
He does have great entrance music.
Yeah.
Here's my question. How do you, and again, they won the game. Congratulations. cause for celebration.
Congratulations.
It's great, okay. But how do you watch your team lose in the fashion that it lost in those two games against Houston with your two best starting pitchers dealing? Well, Berríos was dealing even more than Maeda was, right?
But both were very good.
I feel like Maeda was kind of grinding a little bit more. But
yeah, both were good.
And you pull Berríos out of the game after five innings, if my memory serves me, and you bring in the Cody Stashak, like all these dudes who come in, and they have to be perfect sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, rather than just leaving your lights out starter in for an extra inning. And I get it, third time through the order is a thing, but like there has to be some room for gut managing and just sense of the game. And boy, this guy is absolutely mowing down Red Sox hitters right now, and he's only at 88 pitches, and he's in his 30s. He's pretty durable by this point. Like, his arm's probably not going to fall off.
Yep.
And he's a free agent, I think, at the end of the year anyway, so we're not trying to like protect his future like we might with Jose Berríos. Like, all of these things that would go into a gut decision in that moment. And instead it's, oh, the book says he's facing the lineup for a third time and he's at 88 pitches and therefore we must take him out of the, like, it was the most, you could predict it from a mile away. And then you could also predict Robles and the other relievers potentially struggling and that game becoming a grind. But like, how do you not learn from what happened in the playoffs last year? That's what's mind-boggling to me.
This is what we talked about at the start of this season, this very thing, which is, Rocco, show us that you've learned. And you know what, too? So I understand that this comes from everybody who's important now with this team, from Falvey and Levine and Rocco. So I understand that this decision is not made in the vacuum of Rocco's mind. I'm doing it. It's sort of what their philosophy on how to operate. But there has to be some room to give your manager the ability to use common sense. And common sense yesterday was, we've dropped five consecutive games. We're not playing well. And I, you know what? I don't know if it's a precursor of things to come, if it's just a little slump. It almost doesn't matter. What matters is you've got the chance to end it. You're up 3-0. And your pitcher, who is a hoss, by the way. So, like, this is not a little man on the hill, you know. Oh, my God, he might break in half. It's cold out, and he's at 88 pitches. This is a hoss. The night before, and I'm not even advocating this, but the night before, you saw Carlos Rondon of the White Sox be allowed to throw, and it was probably excessive, 114 pitches to pitch a no-hitter, okay? So, like, you saw that, and I'm not saying that that's a great idea, but Michael Pineda is not going to fall apart if he, let's say, gets near 100 pitches. And I'm not even saying he should have pitched the ninth for sure. What I am saying is common sense says you bring him back out. And here's what I would like. Here's what I would like the Twins and what I want Rocco to be. And this would start above him, but it would trickle down. You know, somewhere, Phil Mackey, there is a happy medium between your favorite National League club and the guy who managed said club growing up, Dusty Baker and Rocco. There's a happy medium, okay? So I'm
But Dusty, I just felt my labrum tear. We need three more innings out of you, Mark Pryor.
Dusty, it's Kerry Wood. I'm your and I'm Mark Pryor. I'm your other prize project. You're right.
My arm is permanently twisted in this direction.
Everybody threw complete games in my. But can't we get isn't there something in between these two men as far as strategy goes?
Yeah. Well, and here's the other thing, I've generally been a Rocco backer. Generally speaking, I love the Zen mindset that he brings to a baseball team. Yeah, this is a marathon. Let's not get too high, too low. Let's let players express themselves and let's not have a bunch of rules. Let's look to make guys as comfortable as possible. And I love that side of it. And I think that has contributed to the Twins winning a lot of regular season games. But I think his biggest blind spot, he is a wishful thinking manager in a lot of ways. In his mind, and he said it off the clip that Declan played off the top, he said, we suppress our emotions when we are in high leverage situations and the game is on the line. We suppress our emotions and we take a deep breath. He's talking about what he hopes the entire roster is able to do in these situations. That, listen, everything is the same. We treat spring training game number 10 the same as we treat an elimination playoff game. And we're all just meditating out here and listening to fish in the clubhouse, and it's all good, man. We're just a super even kill, chill team. Well, in a perfect world, that would be great. That would be great. But you know what? When the game's on the line or when you don't have your best stuff as a reliever, you're probably not suppressing your emotions in those situations. So if you have a pitcher in Big Mike that is suppressing his emotions and he has a great handle on his stuff for that day, ride that guy for an extra inning. We're not talking about 105 pitches to 130 here. We're talking about riding a guy or Jose Berríos in the playoffs, riding a guy that's dialed in that day and being able to know as a manager in your gut, not his overall baseline performance. Sometimes Berríos gets wonky third time through. That's true. But today he's lights out. And you have to be able to make that decision and distinction as a manager and not just be wishful thinking that every reliever is going to come in and have their stuff dialed in. And every game is the same for 8 months, whether it's spring training or October.
And I firmly believe in the sports gods. And you knew the sports gods were going to bite Rocco in the ass when he took Pineda out. You knew it was going. That was an invitation to have the sports gods say, hold on a second here. We sort of granted you this wish today of this guy is going great guns. You've not been playing well. He has allowed one walk and a couple of hits and no run through seven. And you're gonna and you're by the book today, Rocco. The sports gods and sports karma will bite you at times. But that's where you also just have to know. This is not an everyday occurrence, and this is not an everyday, I don't always say, oh, that's a huge mistake. No, that's a mistake, right? A lot of times he takes guys out, and it's absolutely fine. It's like he could have stayed in, but he came out, and it's no big deal. But the Berríos game in the playoffs, the Berríos game in Milwaukee, when I would not have left him in for the entire game, but you certainly could have trotted him back out. Again, he was outstanding. He had given up no hits, okay? He certainly could have pitched another inning without melting. Pineda yesterday. It's almost like Rocco looks at sports karma and the sports god and is like, I've got this one. Hmm. And they're not. They'll bite you in the ass every time. But
he does not believe in the sports gods. No. I don't believe in the sports gods. I'm not saying that that if you practice believing in the sports gods that, we don't have to have a big argument. But I think what he would argue off that game and decision yesterday and the Berríos one is from a process standpoint, protecting your pitcher early in the season and getting him out before the big crooked number comes is what he would look to do. And I just think there's got to be more gray area there. There's got to be you can't just be making that decision every single time a pitcher gets to the mid 80s in pitch count and pulling him from the game.
But why does he manage each pitcher and situation the exact same is my question. That's what I don't understand. Pineda yesterday, he was going fantastic. And I would privately, if I was to sit down with Baldelli, I would privately say what you said, which is, okay, as I said before, he's a Haas. Second of all, he's your third starter. He's a huge guy, and he's not our long-term guy. Like, if he came out and pitched the eighth, what's the worst that's going to happen to him? What's the very worst? He gives up a couple runs. You take him out. I mean, they gave up three runs as is. So I just don't see the downside to having him come out for the eighth.
Yeah. By the way, our Talking Twins discussion here today, celebrating a big win yesterday. Clearly, we're in a very celebratory mood with this club right now. Brought to you by Dennis Kirk. Dennis Kirk has been supporting Mackie and Judd and Score North through a tough year, year and a half or so. And even though it's been a pretty long winter in a lot of ways for baseball fans in the Twin Cities, motorcycle season is on the horizon again. And so if you ride a Harley, whatever you ride, a sport bike, doesn't matter. You'll find what you need at DennisKirk.com. 160,000 parts and accessories in stock. Clothing and helmets as well. Order before 8 p.m. and they ship the same day. Plus, shipping is free on orders over $89. Best in the business. DennisKirk.com. Everything you need for your ride at DennisKirk.com. All right, should we any other final?
Yeah, I got another one to complain about, too. What's going on with the pitching staff? Lewis Thorpe is going to start game one of a bullpen game. And by the way, though, here's the problem. You sent Stashek out. Now, last I checked, his crime is strikeouts. He's striking guys out, which last time I checked, before I checked, he was getting strikeouts, which you want, but his crime was strikeouts. Anyway, he had pitched too much. I don't know. He gets sent down, gone for 10 days. They call up a kid in the interim yesterday to be on the roster for that game. And post game, he gets sent out for Lewis Thorpe, who's going to be your opener tonight. Couldn't you have just picked another opener to start the game and kept Stashek here?
I mean, I don't know why they sent Stashek out, other than like he wasn't going to be able to pitch yesterday.
Okay,
but he can certainly pitch today. I would think.
Right, but wouldn't you rather have him on your roster right now than Lewis Thorpe as the opener in Anaheim? Like, couldn't you have found a workaround for somebody else to pitch the first two innings of that game tonight in Anaheim?
It's weird. I also feel like I thought they were maybe priming Randy Dobnak to give him three innings at some point here during this weekend series, but I was wrong. So yeah, I mean Lewis Thorpe has had like three chances, and he had the weird spring training episode. Was it a year or two ago?
I would like to submit my application for a new job with the Minnesota Twins LLC. I would like to be known as the underthinker coach. And that job will be when Rocco and the boys are overthinking everything. I come in and say, boys, let's dumb it down. Okay. Let's think this through. Like, you guys are, you are Harvard, but you're in your own heads. Okay. Let's let some Benilde get in here.
Oh,
all right.
Okay. I don't know about that.
Underthinker coach, Judd Zolgad.
Now, they have overthought Cody Stashek a few times in key games the last few years. We're like, Cody Stashek is not to the point where he should be in a one-run game against Aaron Judge in a playoff game, right? Like,
fair.
So he's not on that level. But so far this season, he has struck out 12 batters in five innings.
Oh.
Yes. 12 batters in five innings. He's faced 23 batters this season. He has struck out more than half of the batters he has faced so far. And he's going to be down in the minor leagues for a week. Like, it's just, I don't know.
Underthinker coach.
It's weird because, and again, is the logic, all right, we're going to play chess while other teams are playing checkers here, okay? Yeah, Stashek seems dialed in. He just struck out three batters. He now has 12 strikeouts in five innings, but he can't pitch tomorrow. So we should send him out and bring somebody else in. Let's leverage our taxi squad. But now you're without maybe your best strikeout reliever for a week and a half, right? 10 days, yeah. Unless there's an injury. They could designate someone, you know, to the injured list and bring him back.
But like you,
which
just,
they might do. They've done that before too.
But I don't play.
It's just weird.
I don't play chess, but it seems to me that you just made three moves to actually start to lose. Because here's the other thing.
Maybe they're tanking.
You only do the move with Stashek if the reliever that you bring up to have in the bullpen on Thursday is almost certainly going to pitch in Thursday's game because your bullpen is totally taxed. That was never a threat of happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's like switching bat boys. Why'd you do it? Like, what's the purpose?
It's weird. Yeah. No, it is bizarre. It is bizarre. But,
okay, I'm
now
done.
They face Mike Trout for a few days.
I'm done.
That was therapeutic, but a big win.
It was.
Big win for the Twins. Get off that five-game losing streak. Miguel Sano, as I told you and write that down.
I gave you credit on
embarking. He's embarking on a three-week hot stretch right now, and it'll be a lot of fun. All right, boys. One of the craziest nights in NFL draft history took place 7 years ago. 7 years ago at the end of April. Sonny Weaver Jr. making moves. This was the is this the first time that you guys have seen draft?
I've never I've never seen this before today.
I've never seen
what?
I've never seen it. The entire thing.
I have takes. Oh, I have thoughts.
And man. That's why I have a page and a half of typewritten notes.
Me too.
All right, let's fire it up here, Dex.
Here we go.
224 young men who today are about to become players in the National Football League. A day where lives are changed. Fates are decided. Dynasties are born. And the clock is always ticking. Of course. I'm talking about draft day.
You want for it. I want your first pick this year, your first rounder next year, and your third rounder the year after that.
Ouch. Ouch. No thanks.
I know what it sounds like.
Sounds like you're trying to take advantage of me.
I would never do that. Your seventh pick gives you one. A running back with a rap sheet?
You don't know who I'm picking seven, Tom. I'm not going to sell the farm for one guy.
You should. Your farm sucks. Pick number one. Get Bo Kelly.
Yeah, the quarterback.
Brian Drew. Are you talking about Brian Drew? Jesus, you're hilarious. Guy barely made it through half the season before getting injured last year. I have the golden ticket, Sonny. If I give it to you, you get to save football in Cleveland.
Football!
Football, yeah! Football!
Get some!
Welcome in to Sports Movie Rewind here, part of the Mackie and Judd movie review franchise that includes Action Movie Rewind, Rom-Com Rewind, and now Sports Movie Rewind. And boys, Sports Movie Rewind today is presented by our friends at Federated Mutual Insurance Company, supporters of Gophers Athletics, and supporters of business owners in the state of Minnesota for over 100 years. You know, you're running a business, especially during a pandemic, and there's a lot of highs and lows. There's just a lot of people to take care of, and there's a lot of risk as well. It helps tremendously to have an insurance company that gives you peace of mind as you navigate challenges. Find out more about how Federated and MyShield can help you at federatedinsurance.com, where it's our business to protect yours. All right, boys. Draft Day, a 2015 cinematic classic. Actually, 2014, I believe,
14,
when this movie came out. Yeah. Here's the summary. Sonny Weaver Jr., played by Kevin Costner, is the general manager of the Cleveland Browns. One of pro football's most important days, NFL Draft Day, is drawing near. Actually, it's not drawing near. It all takes place on draft day.
Yeah, so. In the morning of.
But Sonny has much more on his mind than just which players to recruit. His lover, who's also the cap expert inside the Browns front office, played by Jennifer Garner, is pregnant. The team's owner wants to fire him. And after Sonny accepts a deal with Seattle that nets him the team's number one overall pick, whoever wrote this summary has never watched the draft in their life. He immediately wonders if he has made the right choice for himself and the Browns. 60% on Rotten Tomatoes. The Rotten Tomatoes critics consensus says, quote, "It's perfectly pleasant for sports buffs and Costner fans, but overall, Draft Day lives down to its title by relying too heavily on the sort of by-the-number storytelling that only a statistician could love. $25 million budget turned into just $29 million at the box office." This was a bust. Kevin Costner, Jennifer Garner, Dennis Leary, Sam Elliott, Chadwick Boseman, RIP, Terry Crews, office linebacker guy.
Yep.
P. Diddy was in this movie as an agent. And this movie was directed by the legendary Ivan Reitman, who directed and created Ghostbusters back in the
80s. Who must not have shown
up. And also
up.
Kindergarten Cop.
Reitman must not have shown for work during the course of this film.
Well, maybe he's not a sports fan.
That would be an understatement.
What do you mean? All right, well, let's start with Judd. Judd, your main takeaway from Draft
Day. Oh, my God. I've got so much on this movie. If ever, so I've come up with a term for this film, and it probably holds true for a bunch of films, but this was the ultimate microwave movie. They put more crap in the microwave and heated it up in a short time span instead of allowing it to breathe and extending it. And I'm not saying that the film should have been longer. Oh, God, no. What I'm saying is my overall takeaway was whoever said this has to be, we're just going to have this be draft day in one day, was absolutely on crack. Because
would you rather this have been like a 5-part miniseries on Hulu or something?
Well, first of all, that would absolutely be fine. But what I would have preferred was that they had brought me the script and asked me, because I would have said, it's not draft day. What are you people doing? It's not draft day. This is a process. I mean, some of the ideas were fine. Some of them were absolutely awful. But this film took like months, what is actually months of work. And decided we're going to make it all fit into. And this is the thing that kept ringing in my head throughout this. We're going to make this all fit into draft day.
You mean when the general manager and the owner are having their first discussion ever about who they might draft?
On?
From a water park, by the way.
Yes.
On draft day.
On draft day. Do you think Rick Spielman and Ziggy head to Valley Fair on the morning of the draft and like walk around and like, hey, there's the corkscrew. Who are you going to draft, Rick?
What are you thinking?
Who are you going to draft? So I've got a ton of thoughts on favorite and least favorite, but my takeaway was the ability of the writers to decide that this was all going to take place on draft day was hilariously funny.
All right, Declan, what was your main takeaway?
Well, a few things come to mind. Yeah, I've never seen this before. But my main takeaway was, number one, the NFL is ruthless and executives are ruthless because they use the death of a father to basically finagle and manipulate a Browns GM into getting the number one overall pick. They use the death of his dad very obviously, come on, your dad would want to do this. Like, they're using his father's recent death, who died a week before the draft, apparently.
He fired him.
Yeah. And they're using that as leverage against him, which I just think is, wow, I guess that probably does happen on draft day. But my
football first, family second, yeah, in the NFL.
It all happens on draft
day. My second main takeaway. And as it actually morphed into two different things. So as I'm watching this, Brian Drew, I want to start with Brian Drew here in my main takeaway. So all we know about Brian Drew is his coach loves him. They get off to a nice start last season. He's got a bum knee, but the players rally around him. He's been working hard. The coach is a big fan. The GM's a fan. I'm thinking, wow, this kind of reminds me of Teddy Bridgewater. At first.
Of course, Declan can tie anything to Teddy Bridgewater.
Hold on, though. This is where it flips. And as the movie progresses, Brian Drew then freaks out, you know, flips everything out in his office, freaks out at him. And then I realize that this is totally Baker Mayfield. This is actually Baker Mayfield. Because this is something Baker, I think, would do. And if the Browns were in this position where, like, you know, even after his sophomore season, where Baker battled some injuries and they didn't live up to expectations, and let's just say they had 6 overall and they traded up to 1, I can see the Browns doing something like this. So it was very much poetic to me of the Cleveland Browns of what they might have done.
The Browns did do all of this, basically, in the 2014 draft. I mean, they swung a big trade in the top 10, and then later on they traded back up higher in the first round to get Johnny Manziel at 22nd or whatever. I mean, it was... They basically, and I think at one point, Chris Berman, there's a write-up in Wikipedia, Chris Berman on the actual live, like the real-life draft coverage said, you know, this is better than draft day or whatever. Like, they're making more moves than they did on draft day. So I have a million thoughts, and we'll get to all of them here. But, like, my main takeaway from this movie is Kevin Costner can make any sports movie work, whether it's an amazing script like Bull Durham, or whether it's a questionable script, like, okay, so you're going to be a broken down old starting pitcher that throws a perfect game and tells himself to clear the mechanism every time he runs into trouble, like falling behind in the count. Oh, and there's going to be a weird love story, and then it's all going to make sense at the end. Or whether it's like, all right, so you're going to be a GM, and you're going to be hooking up with your capologist. She's going to be pregnant, and you're going to trade up to the first overall pick, and then you're going to trade again, and then you're going to make 3 trades basically in the first 10 picks. Like, it makes no sense, but he can make it work because he's charismatic. He's just like, every time he's on camera, he's a great actor. and he's great in sports movies. He's the best sports movie actor of my generation.
He's never asked, though, to play a different role. It's always the same role. Like, they just write it for, okay, let's write a golf film for Costner. Okay,
just Kevin Costner.
Yeah. Let's write a baseball film. Now, Bull Durham, I think, was great, but he was still the same guy, down in his luck, the veteran guy. Now he's a down-on-his-luck executive, and the next time when they do a basketball film, he'll be a down-on-his-luck executive or former coach there.
Down-on-his-luck farmer.
It's always the same, which is I'm sort of a handsome guy, but my luck's the worst. I got bad luck. And he's got that little accent. He's got that little twinge, which works for him. I mean, but it's hilarious because it's like they take the script and just change the sport. Okay, now you're a equipment guy. Now you're a manager. Now you're an executive. Now you're a former quarterback. I mean, he could be anything.
The equipment guy.
Hey.
What's his next sports movie going to be? He's got to have one more in him, right?
I don't know, man. He's getting a little bit old now, right? He's got to be 60-something at this point, if I'm not mistaken.
There's a role in there for him somewhere.
But he probably made so much from each one that it bankrolls films that he truly likes doing. He probably we'll pay you a million bucks to pitch for the Tigers and be in Yankee Stadium and be down on your luck. Okay,
a
that
million.
Sounds good.
Yeah, a million.
Or five
made
or whatever.
A lot more than a million.
Whatever he made from that.
All right, what was, Judd, your favorite part of draft day?
Oh, absolutely. Just how unbelievable this entire film was as far as cramming everything in. I mean, nothing about how they do draft day to me. There are elements here and there that might take place, but nothing about this film, like it all happens in this period of time. They just cram it all in. It's like they shove it in a box and close it. Dennis Leary, who I actually, as an actor, I really like plays the most over-the-top, stereotypical football coach with, you know, I don't know if he's supposed to have a drinking problem or what, but like how he's threatening, you know, he's threatening the GM. And I think he's supposed to be, here's my guess. I think the character's written off of what Barry Switzer did in Dallas, because they talk about how he won a Super Bowl in Dallas, but it was, you know, pre-made, right? So that's Switzer taking over for Jimmy Johnson in Dallas. And I also sent some Sean Payton there as well, because Payton had, at least back in the day, a house back in Dallas that he at one point was threatening to go to the Cowboys or something like that. So I sensed that. But my favorite part was just the implausibility of the entire draft day experience and everything that takes place, like all the outside stuff. I mean, his Rob Brzezinski is pregnant. All of that stuff is just hilarious.
I'm envisioning Rick and Rob getting into a broom closet. To talk about life and draft, like three times.
But at some point in time, it so jumped the shark to me that I just went with it.
All right, so Judd's favorite part was just everything about the movie. Declan, what was your favorite part about draft day?
My favorite part is easily the cast, man. The cast is great. You have Kevin Costner, Jennifer Gardner, who is on Declan's Mount Rushmore, by the way. Like I love me some Jennifer Gardner. She is on my Mount Rushmore. I love her. Chadwick Boseman, RIP, and yeah, one of my all-time favorites, Terry Crews. Dennis Leary, dude. Dennis Leary plays the perfect football coach, that surly football coach. He is phenomenal at it. P. Diddy, Sam Elliott with the cameo as the Wisconsin Badgers head coach. Are you kidding me? Arian Foster's in this movie. He plays the Cleveland running back. I love the cast in this film. I think it's absolutely phenomenal.
They're telling me we have not yet decided. I mean, we're not seriously considering anybody else, right?
What are you doing, Sonny?
Just made a trade with the Seahawks.
For?
The number one pick.
Al, are you here?
Yes.
Is this going to screw us up with the salary cap?
Moving from 7 to 1. It's about another $1.5 million we weren't anticipating for this year. Maybe an extra $5.5 million in signing bonus.
We have that?
We can make it work.
Oh,
we can
get into it. Music to my ears.
He doesn't know. That's something else I love. He just made a huge trade, didn't tell anybody. And he doesn't know if it works with the cap, and then consults his cap.
Okay, can we? So my favorite part about this movie is what you just basically said is how terribly run of a franchise this is. Like, let's go through the list here, okay? I was just making a list as I was watching this again last night. So let's start with the fact that they just made a knee-jerk, impulsive trade to get the number one overall pick with no plan of what they're actually going to do. Like, so he makes the trade. He basically gets, like, goaded into making the trade by his overzealous owner. It was very Jets-like, right, where we care more about making a splash than we care about actually winning football games. And so he makes this big trade, and then he reveals in the draft war room that they've done no homework on Bo Callahan because they didn't really think it was a possibility. So he's like, all right, the draft starts in 3 hours. We need to know everything possible about Bo Callahan. Go, right? So you've got really no – they've done no thorough research on the top prospects in the draft. Did not plan at all for him to potentially fall beyond the first pick. The owner is meddling and telling him, I care more about a splash, especially offense, than I care about, like, building a sound, structured football team. You got the GM hooking up with the cap gal. The head coach disrespecting the general manager in front of all the other scouts and front office members. And then you've got the backup, well, the starting quarterback who thought he was going to be the backup in Brian Drew, trashing Sonny's office on draft day as well.
Yes.
So, like,
which no one cleans up, which, by the way, just gets left trashed for the rest of the film.
And then his family shows up with the ashes of his dead legendary football coach father and says, like, I know that this is draft day and you guys are probably pretty busy, but this is the day we're going to spread his ashes
on
the practice
field. Draft day!
God, dude.
It all so happens.
Like, and just, like, impulsive, just a horribly, horribly run franchise. And then, not to spoil, because we'll get into, like, the value of the trades, too, but they made all these moves in 2014 NFL. For a linebacker?
Yeah.
And a running back?
Yeah.
For a linebacker and a running back. They traded three first-round picks for a linebacker that was expected to fall into the teens.
Hold this for the least, so the plausibility of this film. Let's get into that, because there's a lot to digest here about why good old Sonny Weber Jr. would have been fired after this draft.
All right, let's go to least favorite thing. Your least favorite thing about draft day, Judd.
Well, my favorite part was embracing the nonsense. But I guess I got a question about this entire film. If you were, you know, so they're clearly trying to serve two groups of people here, audiences. They're trying to serve the football fan, like, because it's, you know, it's glitzy and they got the football stuff. But they're also trying to draw in the non-football fan who wants some type of love story. And it's damn near impossible to do both.
But that's like, pretty much every Kevin Costner sports movie.
Yes, but like at the start, I love the explanation of Cleveland sports. Like, because there's people who don't know about Cleveland sports. So you know, we're going to explain Cleveland sports in a nutshell. But did they really need, like, the Jennifer Garner thing? Mm. And like, I liked her character. Like, it was sort of cool. But did she really need to be carrying around his child and to just have found out she's pregnant, like, right there? Did the mother really need to show up with it? Like, his old man was dead and had just died, which is not a bad storyline. I totally get that one, right? But did she really need to show up with his ex-wife and Arquette? Sister, I forget which one. Did she really need to show up with her on that day to scatter the ashes? Like, why couldn't he just have been dead, which was fine? Like, what?
Also, to add to your Jennifer Garner point, like, it's so formulaic and sexist too. It can't just be that there's a woman executive in the
NFL. Yeah, and she's good at what she
does,
right?
It's gotta be like, there's a woman executive, and clearly the GM is hooking up with her. Like,
but like, why couldn't you have picked a path here and been like, okay, this is going to be a film for football fans. And you know what? If people dip in, that's fine. But we're not going to have the capologist get pregnant, too. I mean, it would have been bad enough if she hadn't been the capologist and they were trying. And they're going in the broom closets to talk, and it's draft day, and he's just disappearing, and then he comes back. Why don't you just pick a path for this film?
Because they're spending so much money on Kevin Costner, they need a wider mainstream audience to make it pay off. And it still didn't. It still didn't.
I know, but I think they submarined it by trying to do way too much here.
And I don't know. I feel like every sports fan that would have watched the movie. And they just failed to get the wide audience.
I would never have watched this film.
Did you watch it because Jennifer Garner was the cap?
If it hadn't, I didn't watch it. I've seen the end of it on TV. But like I was.
But what was your decision to not watch it 5 years ago? When
it sounded stupid. My decision was it sounded stupid. And plus, I've seen every Costner film. Like they don't change. His sports films don't change. I can tell you what's going to happen. Woman who's either pregnant or a girlfriend. They're on the rocks. Career in turmoil. The Costner blueprint's very easy.
Yeah, but like the Costner blueprint is great. Like that's what draws me. Like Costner makes very bad movies sometimes that are great because he's Kevin Costner. So like you look at a Kevin Costner movie and think, oh, I already know what's going to happen. And I look at it and say, I know what's going to happen and I am here for it. Take my $12 movie theater, please. I have another?
They continually to me just get worse. Because Bull Durham I absolutely adore. I love that film. I thought that was a great film.
How dare you say that about For Love of the Game?
Oh, For Love of the Game is awful. And it's the same film.
It will be reviewed on this show. Rest in peace, Kelly Preston.
Awful.
Dex, what was your least favorite part about
The least favorite part is the pregnancy storyline. It's completely unnecessary. And this is also like the third movie in a row we've had a weird taboo with pregnancy. We had it in Sweet Home Alabama. I forget the other rom-com we did too, where like there's been these weird taboos about the pregnancy. If it was even at the end of the film, because you can clearly tell they're a couple, like they start within the same home. If at the end of the movie she's like, and by the way, yeah, we've had this great draft day and I'm pregnant. I think I would have been like, oh, okay, the movie ends. You know, like was that scene necessary? Maybe not, but like it's okay because it's not going to be dragged out through the entire film. Gardner is already like this badass capologist, okay? She's confident. She knows Super Bowl history. She knows the Browns. She knows what she's doing. Why do we have to add in this fact of like, hey, I'm pregnant and also like you're not supporting me, but also like, hey, let's talk about the draft. Let's talk about the cap. Let's talk about Super Bowl. Like it's not necessary. She's already a badass. Why do we have to add this weird taboo pregnancy story? I literally could not stand it. And also a small other least favorite part, the incompetent Jaguars general manager. He was more incompetent
super
than
nervous.
He was more incompetent than the Browns and the Seahawks. He traded his 7th overall pick for 3 seconds.
Yeah,
you didn't even get a 1st round pick. Now
he traded. He traded up one, right?
Did he trade up one?
But which makes it worse,
right?
Am I wrong on this?
No,
I'm sorry. You're right.
Seattle got that pick. Dex is right. 3 seconds for his first.
Yeah. That's also
so they traded. So they traded out of the 1st round altogether for basically two future seconds
because they didn't want to have to decide on Bo Callahan on draft day.
So even though we have a top 10 pick, let's just eject from the 1st round altogether for a couple future second round picks.
Because Costner told me to.
Yeah,
Crash told me to eject.
The panicked Jaguars GM.
That was
all right, my least favorite part of this movie was actually summed up brilliantly in the Wikipedia notes at the bottom of the page. Jack Hamilton of Slate was harshly critical of this movie. Quote, the filmmaking here consists of making sure the camera is pointed at people who are explaining the film's plot to one another. If you go back and watch this movie in your mind, right, or just think about this movie, It's almost 2 hours long, and almost every single line in this movie is them explaining what the draft is all about to the audience, right? Like the dialogue between the Seahawks GM and Sonny the second time around, especially where, listen, your franchise is this. You know that this is the quarterback that you want, and this is the deal that you have to make. Like it's not them talking to each other; it's them talking to an audience that doesn't know anything about football.
Yeah,
which of course, like not that many people that don't know anything about football probably watch this movie. So the plot altogether was so hokey, or the dialogue, I should say, and the plot. But like the dialogue was so hokey and they had to over-explain everything at every single turn. And it was like, all right, just give us a little credit for having watched the NFL draft before.
Massive flaw, too. The coach, the character of the coach was written to be very upset and to be trying to protect the future draft picks and not the present.
Right.
When's the last time you saw a coach who's like, you know what, I'm really worried about 2022 or 2023? Like he keeps saying, you trade away all our future draft picks, you trade away the future. The coach would be incredibly excited to have the short-term picks. Like it made no sense. Like somebody, it was almost like they oversimplified the football end because they truly didn't get it themselves.
I'll give you another least favorite part here. 1B here for you. So the Browns make this trade. They trade three future first-round picks for the number one overall pick. And their phone is ringing off the hook with teams trying to now get the number one pick from them. Like, once that trade goes down on draft day, so you're like 5 hours away from the start of the draft, right, and you have just traded your entire future for the number one overall pick. Why now are the Bills calling you thinking, oh, now we can get the number one pick? Like,
how they would swoop in and show this the stadium? Like the Bills, it would be like Buffalo, New York, and then they would have a camera shot or like a helicopter shot of the stadium. And
Arrowhead Stadium.
And they'd be
here's
like,
an empty
hello, Buffalo
there.
Bills, how can I help you? We want your pick. Oh, no, we can't do that. Not today. It's draft day.
That's amazing. All right, least believable thing.
Oh, God. Can we all just participate here? Like, yeah. I feel like this is a group thing.
Yes.
So let's go through the trades real quick here. All right, just to lay this out, okay?
Yes.
So this is the Browns draft day. Just summed up, and I'll start with sort of laying out 12 hours before draft.
Yeah,
the first overall pick is on the clock.
And before you start, too, in another example of the people that wrote this film having no idea, the number one pick, like the number one quarterback in this draft, Bo Callahan. All right, so but we're talking about a pure, supposedly at the start of the film, can't miss. Likely in real life, an SEC QB, okay,
is from Wisconsin.
Now, I know Russell Wilson is, and somebody clearly saw that and got excited, okay? But, like, we're talking, and he's been on our show, and he's a great guy, but we're talking about the home of Brooks Bollinger. We're talking about a place where Daryl Bevel. Exactly.
Like, Jim Sorge.
Like, who didn't fall on that sword and say, oh, no, Clemson. You know, Alabama, take your pick.
Yeah.
Wisconsin? Ohio State.
Ohio State would have been. Yeah,
but Wisconsin? These guys hand off.
Yeah.
And anyway,
so
I digress.
So 12 hours before the draft begins, the Browns are picking seventh, and they already have an Alex Smith-like quarterback, a good, but maybe hasn't reached his upside. Did we ever find out where Brian Drew was originally drafted? Was he a first-round pick?
They didn't really say, but they did say he was in year. I think when he's going on his tandem year, like year six, he's been in the league for
going
like five
into
or
seventh
six years.
Year.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I think he was just a solid QB who got hurt.
Yep.
And was coming back off it.
And he's in the low key underrated character in this movie is the strength and conditioning guy who's just slapping everyone on the ass.
Yes.
And guess what he benched 25 times.
Big Dan Campbell vibes. Big Dan Campbell
vibes.
Oh, he's
very Dan Campbell vibes.
We fed him full of steroids today, Sonny Weaver Jr. Steroids are bad for you, but they help improve your performance.
Dan Campbell doesn't just like football. Dan Campbell loves football.
We're going to kick you in the teeth, all right? And when you punch us back, we're going to smile at you. And when you knock us down, we're going to get up. And on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off. All right, and we're going to stand up, and then it's going to take two more shots to knock us down. All right, and on the way up, we're going to take your other kneecap, and we're going to get up, and then it's going to take three shots to get us down. And when we do, we're going to take another hunk out of you. Before long, we're going to be the last one standing. All right, that's going to be the mentality.
Football!
Football, yeah! Football!
Get some!
The direct quote from Brian Drew when he's in the locker room with him is, I've been in the league for 8 seasons. I've been to the playoffs. I know the system. I can make it work, and I've busted my ass this offseason. So, yeah, he's a veteran. He's out.
So he's like 30 years old.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dan Campbell saw draft day at least 5 times.
In the same day.
I bet he still watches it.
Yeah.
I bet you that he's got a VHS tape in his house with draft day on it.
Seahawks with the number one pick, looking to trade back. Bo Callahan. By the way, if the Seahawks are that, if the Seahawks were that interested in later in the movie trading all of, because you know it's a sunk cost. Like they've got all these picks from the Browns, and they're that interested in moving up one pick to get Bo Callahan. Then why would they have been looking to trade the number one overall pick?
They wouldn't have.
Doesn't make any sense.
And Bo Callahan. So Bo Callahan was passed over as the first pick, and from then on, everybody freaked out and decided this potentially generationally great QB was too big of risk to take. And so he gets to Seattle, and now they're going to be the ones, when they traded out to say, hold on a second, we have to take him now.
And
like, think
everyone's looking at the Cleveland Browns as like the guiding compass for great draft
you
decisions.
Would say,
well, wait, if the Browns think that he's going to be a bust, then well, what are we missing?
Look what's happening. He's falling.
The second team picking would say, thank you, Cleveland. You stink.
Idiots.
You're idiots. We're taking Bo Callahan. And instead they're all like, oh, we can't take Bo Callahan.
Yeah, we can't do that. Yep.
So the owner wants GM Sonny Weaver to, quote, make a splash to sell tickets, which is, to me, a telltale sign of a terrible owner. And it seems like they're all having these discussions about who they're going to draft for the first time. So that's kind of the setup. Here's the summary of what they did in trades. They traded three first-round picks, including a first-round pick swap in this year's draft, to move up from 7 to 1.
Mm-hmm.
And they draft a linebacker in Vontae Mack, whose agent told him, brace for falling into the teens or later in this draft. It could be a long night. So
yes.
A guy that
yes.
was widely expected to maybe fall into the teens, you traded three first-round picks to move from 7 to 1
and,
to draft him.
And you made that pick. You turned in the card from your office without telling anybody.
Yes. And then you trade, on top of that, you trade three second-round picks for the Jaguars' 6th. So now you've traded all of your future first and seconds for the next 3 years to move up to from 7 to 1 and from the second round to 6. And then they trade the 6th to Seattle to move back to the 7th again to get the first round picks back and to get punt returner David Putney. And with the 7th pick, they draft a running back, Ray Jennings. So the summary is they basically, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but they basically traded three second-round picks to move up from the second round to the top 10, basically to the number 1, and they wind up with a linebacker, a running back, and a punt returner.
Yes.
Right?
And the best part, in my opinion, the return of the punt returner was key. As if that would put you over the top.
Yes.
You got a great punt returner!
Whoever like laid out this, I mean, it's not, I don't know how involved Reitman, the director, was in writing this movie, but his heyday was the 80s.
Yeah.
And so he may have been thinking like, all right, back in my day watching football, we had punt returners, we had running backs with big neck rolls, and we had linebackers with those boards, support boards going up over their helmets. Damn it. What else was not believable to you guys in this movie?
The entire thing with Bo Callahan. So Sonny makes this huge trade. And he's got the top pick. And by the way, again, he has not told anybody. The owner basically said, get that pick. He does not tell anybody. His coach, his executive staff. And so he makes the trade, which is sort of okay. And then on draft day, he starts to do research on Bo Callahan. So nobody has vetted this guy. Like, this is what I'm saying is teams do this for months. Teams vet through players they know they can't get. Like
they can't find the film on him, too.
Yes.
Like, that guy goes up and berates the intern.
And the
4 hours before the draft, they can't find Bo Callahan.
And that guy was another stereotypical football guy. Get me that. And the intern, where the hell did he? So he's just starting, but he's, like, incredibly important.
Dude,
and he's,
that'd be like me being hired by the Vikings on draft day.
Yes, it would be.
Your first
and
day
Brzezinski's
is draft
defending
day.
You. Get away from him.
Yeah.
Your first day is draft day, and you play a key role. Like, wait, what?
And what was the intern's computer doing in Sonny's office? Because I think the computer that he threw when he got mad at his mom was in his office, not outside it. So, like, did he just come in and leave his computer there in the GM's office on his first day of work, which is Dex so eloquently pointed out, happens to be draft day? And the other thing that would have got Sonny fired that made no sense and they didn't address it is at the end, the guy who owns the Browns flies back and he's all pissed off, and I completely get that. And so then Sonny makes all these trades, right? But in the end, he does not get the guy that the owner told him to get. He gets a linebacker and running back, and the owner's like all happy. Like, the whole film was based on, I want you to get Bo Callahan to sell tickets, and he's like, and he didn't get him, and without an explanation or anything, the guy who owns the team's like, heck of a job. Great job,
and
Sonny.
He flew from, look, the draft takes forever. Like, we've all experienced and watched.
Sure.
It'll take 3.5 hours. Like, that's not a surprise. He flew from New York to Cleveland between picks 2
and six. There is zero. He would have to like leave the top of the roof of the of Radio City Music Hall to get back to Cleveland, back into the war room, to then berate the coach and GM for making that trade within four picks. There's no chance he could have made that happen.
If you guys were the were Sonny Weaver in that spot, okay, and you're trying to find, you need to find. Everybody has a thing, and we need to find out if that thing matters or not, right? Joe Montana was undersized. It didn't matter. Russell Wilson was too short. I think that's just me making that one up, but it didn't matter.
No, it's true.
Right?
No, you're right.
So if you found out in the hours leading up to the draft that this guy who is Bo Callahan is supposed to be the next Andrew Luck, right? He's the most surefire prospect since Andrew Luck is what they said at the beginning of the movie. And you find out two things, that his teammates didn't show up to his birthday party, and you find out that he lied about the $100 bill in the back of the playbook. Would that be enough for you guys, after you've already traded multiple first-round picks, to move up to number one?
Yeah.
Would that be enough for you guys to say no on Bo Callahan?
Well, first...
Would you have the balls?
First of all, I would have known that weeks beforehand. Second of all... if this guy's a generationally great QB, no, I'd still take him. So people don't like him. Okay, that's bad, but that's not the... But the whole thing of the guy researching him the day of on draft day, he's like going to start to research him, was just, to me, was hilarious. But no, I mean, if you make that trade, you're all in. You're taking Bo Callahan. Yeah. You're not trading the pick back to Seattle, and Seattle doesn't want the pick back at that point.
Like, wouldn't it make more sense if this is why they're such an incompetent organization, that if you had not done your research on Bo Callahan, and you already felt like you had a quarterback in Brian Drew, wouldn't you just trade up for the number two pick and pay less? Right? Like, what? Okay, we don't need Bo Callahan. So who's picking number two?
Yes,
let's move up to number two and not have to give up that third first round pick.
And Sonny, as they try and set the premise about what's wrong with the Browns, Sonny. In the morning, driving around Cleveland on draft day, listening to sports talk radio.
That's the best part, too.
Sonny Weaver Jr.'s guy, he should be fired if he doesn't make the right pick tonight in the National Football League draft, which the Cleveland Browns will be involved in. Come on!
While they're over-explaining the plot to you?
Yes.
All right. Would you guys rather have, for 2021, would you guys rather have Kirk Cousins or Brian Drew as your starting quarterback?
Brian Drew, because he would make fraction. I mean, yeah, he's Alex Smith, dude. Like, he's Alex Smith 8 years into his career, not Alex Smith current day.
Yeah, he's not on a rookie contract anymore. He probably makes some money.
But he's probably making mid-tier money. He's probably not making break the bank money. Yeah, I'd rather have Brian Drew, 100%.
So he trashes the GM's office, goes absolutely apoplectic, right? And the next time we see him, he's at home with his beautiful wife and cute daughter, sitting on the couch, hoping against hope that they don't take Bo Callahan.
Yeah.
Do you think that's how it works?
It's amazing. Honey, sorry, I just got done committing career suicide. I destroyed my boss's office, and now we're hugging because they drafted a linebacker number one overall. Another note from the production notes on Wikipedia. So former Green Bay Packers vice president Andrew Brandt criticized draft day as, quote, lacking any true depiction of how an NFL team operates leading up to and during the draft, and less realistic about the business of sports than Jerry Maguire and Moneyball. Also, the Buffalo Bills were initially supposed to be the subject of this movie, but it was cheaper to apparently do the production in Cleveland. So they did it in Cleveland instead. Before we get to some of our final categories here, like the believability rankings, et cetera, any other final thoughts before we get to these last couple rankings?
I agree with Andrew Brandt.
We just exhausted quite a bit.
I agree with Brandt. I think he basically is correct about all the things he said about this film.
Well, I'll tell you what's probably going to happen. If there was a sequel to Draft Day, I can assure you that trading all of that capital to get a linebacker and to get a running back probably results in you getting fired about a year later and having a lot of time to golf.
Yeah.
And so if I'm Sonny Weaver in that spot, I'm going to PXG Minneapolis, and I'm checking out the new Gen 4 golf clubs, which have arrived. Drivers, fairways, hybrids, irons. These are PXG's flagship clubs and the best performing clubs PXG has ever made. They also have the 0-2-11 golf clubs, full line of high-performance clubs packed with PXG technology, priced a little bit more within reach. PXG Minneapolis in Southdale Center. If you lose your job as a football coach and you have some time to golf, PXG Minneapolis and PXG.com/ Minneapolis. All right, boys, we have two rankings here to get to. Number one is the believability of sports action. And in this case, there wasn't like actual football being played, really. So we're going to go believability of the draft lead up action on a 1 through 10 scale. So far, Little Big League at 7.3 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
And Mighty Ducks with a 7 out of 10. Fairly believable.
Yep.
Fairly believable.
Yep.
Judd?
One. This is a one. There might be a modicum of, if given enough time, a modicum. But when you're telling me that you're going to make a franchise-changing trade for a generationally great QB and then start to find out the flaws, you get a one from me.
Declan?
Three. Because I do think ridiculous trade talks like this are happening behind the scenes. I 100% ridiculous, absurd trade talks are happening behind the scenes. There might be a lot of clicking up and hanging up the phone immediately when some of these are offered. And there might be idiots like the Jaguars who take 3 second-round picks for the 6th overall pick. But I do think those talks happen. But in general, this is you literally traded 3 first-round picks, got them back, and you wanted a sweetener with a kick returner, dude. Like, come on. That zero chance that happens. That's a UDFA. You find a kick returner, however the hell you can do that. It's a 3. 3 out of 10.
Throw them in.
It's a 4. You guys are both selling this too short, because ultimately the most believable part of this movie is the fact that the Cleveland Browns absolutely botched it beyond all recognition. And the Cleveland Browns, we got an inside glimpse as to how dysfunctional, up until our guy Kevin Stefanski took over and said, guys, I'm fixing this.
Right.
20 years, this was probably not that far off from how unprepared and dysfunctional the actual Cleveland Browns front office was. So I'm giving it a 4 because of that, which makes it a 2.7 out of 10. Tying it, I'm sorry, you know what? On the believability of sports action, I was wrong. Little Big League was an 8.7. Mm. Mighty Ducks was a 2.7. And Draft Day is a 2.7 out of 10 for us. So, all right, pure entertainment value. Little Big League was a 7.3. Mighty Ducks was a 7. 1 through 10, pure entertainment value, Judd.
I'll give it a 5. I'll give it a 5. Mindless, inane, stupid. But you know what? It was so bad, it almost embraced being bad. So it gets a 5. I just love the fact that this, as Deck said, kick-ass executive who's doing a great job, and she knows the cap and football upside down, has to spend the entire film going into a broom closet to covertly talk to the GM because she's carrying his child. It's a 5.
It's a 6 for me. I've heard that this movie is one of the worst films of all time. I've heard terrible reviews about this movie, and I had pretty negative preconceived notions going into the film. That being said, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot more than what people say about. I don't think it's as bad as people have made it out to be. That have, their testimonies to me, at least. I enjoyed it. I would, if it was on TV, I would probably hold on until a commercial break. I wouldn't flip away until the commercial break, but I would probably watch a scene or two. It's a 6. 6 out of 10.
Obviously, I enjoy this movie more than you guys. It's a 7 for me, and it's a 7 because I'll watch Kevin Costner in almost anything.
You got a man crush, is what you got.
He's great. Yeah, he's definitely. Listen, Kevin Costner, The Rock. There's a few guys that might get me to,
I feel San Andreas,
teams, if you will.
I feel San Andreas embraced the ridiculous a little bit more, and I actually enjoyed that more.
All right. So with me giving it a 7, that's an average score of a 6, which makes it the least entertaining of the 3 sports movies we have reviewed, behind Little Big League and Mighty Doc. So, all right, you guys, I got a list here still of – I have an idea for what we should do next week.
Okay.
I think we should do another sports movie. And I think we should just keep going with the headliners. I think we should do Major League next week.
Sure. Hold on.
You guys down for that? Judd seems a little tepid there.
No, I got to write that down. Major League. No, that's fine with me.
Desmond, have you seen
Major League?
Seen
it for
I've seen Major League.
I've not seen it for a long time.
I've seen Major League. Yes,
okay. It's baseball season. Mm-hmm. The Twins are off to a slow start. They might need some inspiration. Maybe they can take some inspiration.
It's pretty
from
good.
The Cleveland Indians of like 1989, I want to say, is the year.
Pretty good, yeah.
So
Bob Uecker.
Major League will be the movie we do next week. And then we can make a decision. Do we want to mix in some action movies and some rom-coms again throughout the summer? So,
summer blockbusters are coming, boys.
That's right.
The summer blockbusters are right around the corner.
And we are your guide here. That's right. I miss going to movies. been a long time.
I do too, man.
Do you guys?
I love the movies. Mm-hmm. A large $9 icy to go along with my $10 ticket, dude. And
not
a thing of Twizzlers.
I don't like
you know, popcorn's optional for me because usually I don't really need the popcorn.
Love the popcorn.
I'll tell you what. The St. Anthony, Maine.
Yes,
so we used
dude.
To live on St. Anthony, Maine. So the popcorn they have there, I don't know what kind of cocaine butter they put on there. We would sometimes just walk to the movie theater, get the popcorn, and then walk back home and go watch a movie in our living room.
Oh, that's a solid call.
Good. Yeah.
Oh, popcorn.
Yeah.
I love popcorn.
That's my movie theater too. It's a great little spot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't miss movies.
All right, boys. All right. Good dissection. Well, Judd just doesn't want to leave his house for anything.
No.
That's basically true now.
Bunnies are this studio.
No,
or
you know, no. I haven't been to Bunnies in more than a year. I am very happy just staying home now.
I think that vaccine will kick in pretty soon here.
Yeah, man.
You should feel good going back to Bunnies. That's a wrap on Mackie and Judd and Sports Movie Rewind. Thanks for hanging out with us, and be sure to binge Major League at some point between now and next Friday. See you guys.
The commissioner, ready to make history in Cleveland. With the first pick of the 2014 NFL Draft, the Cleveland Browns select Vontae Mack.